Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
Last night, the NBA draft. Weird timing. Usually it's in June, obviously, so to have the NBA draft nearing Thanksgiving was a bizarre feeling. But either way, teams needed to stock up on their rookies and make some trades as well as we get into the final month before the NBA season kicks off again. Indeed, think about that. It feels like we just had the Lakers crown champions, but opening night for the NBA is just over a month away on December the 22nd. So time to get those offseason rosters in place. We had some winners last night. Let's delve into them. It is where we begin. Your cold open.
I just want to be the best player to ever play basketball.
That's it. It's that simple.
Best player to ever play basketball. Yeah.
Got a lot of great players in that team. So me just coming in, just trying to, man, fit my role, just try to stay humble and just trying to be coachable, which I am. Work hard, just play hard. So really like that fit and that position that I'm in, it's a great position for me, great fit for me. And I'm just ready to go in there and just play my role.
Man, straight blessing, for real. I don't even have enough words to say. I mean, I'm just blessed right now, for real.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So those were the voices of the top three picks in this draft. The Timberwolves went number one with Georgia's swingman Anthony Edwards, who said, I just want to be the best ever to do this. Okay, bar set kind of high. The Warriors at number two took Memphis big man James Wiseman. And the Hornets at number three took LaVar Ball's youngest, LaMelo Ball. In terms of winners for me, let's start off of the draft, and that would be because of a trade, the Philadelphia 76ers. Earlier in the day, trading away Al Horford and needing to package a first-round pick to do it, but I really liked that because it freed up the Sixers from that ridiculous contract that was bestowed upon Al Horford last year that obviously never ended up paying dividends. I didn't like it. I never liked that fit. Last year, the Sixers clearly didn't benefit from having Al Horford on that roster, and Daryl Morey on draft night's able to get him out of the way and bring in Danny Green. Now, again, you've got to trade away a first-round draft pick and a second-round pick, but you get back Danny Green and an $8.6 million trade exception. And now you're not paying Al Horford's contract. Instead, that went out the door. I thought that was a big win for the Philadelphia 76ers as Al Horford heads to Oklahoma City. The Thunder also a winner because they've got cap room and they've got a million first-round draft picks. So we're going to reach the point where the Thunder have all of the first-round draft picks over the next decade or what? Add another one to the list for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I also like James Wiseman for the Warriors. I think since Golden State's built around the perimeter, getting a young big man like Wiseman is a really good fit for them. I actually liked him better than Anthony Edwards. I thought that even though we had such a small type of sample size because he played so limited last year before the NCAA stepped in, I think that Wiseman's a really athletic, gifted big man built in the modern mold. He's not the traditional stand-of-the-blocks big man. So I think the Warriors made a savvy move there. I did like him better than Anthony Edwards. Now, there's a loser part of this, and that is Golden State because of the Klay Thompson injury. But we don't know the severity of that yet. He injured his leg in a workout. We got news of this yesterday afternoon. We don't know the severity of it. He's going to have an MRI today, and we'll see. So you could add the number two pick in the draft, but lose one of the best sharpshooters in NBA history. I also thought the Knicks were a rare winner last night. They end up with Dayton Flyers standout Obi Toppin, who led the nation in scoring, and Toppin was a highlight machine last year for the A-10. I know that we here on CBS Sports Network had profiled him and spotlighted him so many times over the course of the regular season, so we certainly had a good chance to watch him at Dayton, and Toppin is an explosive player. I liked it, though, because Knicks fans have been waiting for something to feel good about for a long time, and Toppin grew up as a Knicks fan. He grew up just outside of New York City, so he's from the area, and he was crying tears of joy last night that it made it feel like, wow, this is actually a feel-good moment for Knicks fans when they never had feel-good moments. So I like that play as well for the New York Knicks. Those were my winners last night of the NBA draft. Mraz, who were your winners from the first two rounds, the only two rounds of the 2020 NBA draft?
Can a winner be us that the draft is finally over after the lack of buzz heading in? Or is
sure, yeah,
obvious?
We could do that. Yeah.
Because, frankly, I mean, we could break down all the draft picks we want. The angle I'm going to take here is, boy, could a draft have any less buzz or any less juice than it did last night. Virtual or no virtual. Thank goodness for the NBA trades, and thank goodness for the Al Horford trade. And I don't want to say thank goodness because it's terrible what happened to Klay Thompson, but I found last night's draft DA to be the ultimate snooze fest and the worst draft, even worse than an Anthony Bennett draft for me.
Anthony Bennett is kind of held up as the biggest bust of the last, what, 25, 30 years in the NBA.
Right.
First-round draft pick. He was jettisoned by the Cavaliers. He was the number one overall pick, jettisoned by the Cavaliers within, what, a season and a half or something like that, and then never ended up having really a professional basketball career. You think that Anthony Edwards is worse than Anthony Bennett, or just that there's no juice?
There's no juice. I think Anthony Edwards, I mean, look, he's built of granite. I think he has a much better chance to succeed than Anthony Bennett, but overall, top to bottom, just the lack of pure superstardom in this draft, I think combined with the fact that it's football season, combined with the fact that there was no NCAA tournament, I think we just sat through, in my opinion, the draft that is the worst draft of our lives in terms of juice. Now, I think there's an opportunity for obviously plenty of these players to succeed, and if I really wanted to pick a serious winner, my winner would actually be the Orlando Magic and getting Cole Anthony, because I think Cole Anthony, remember we were talking about this time last year, might be the number one pick in the draft for him to slide. He played in a situation in North Carolina where, you know, Roy Williams basically was taking guys from mid-majors to put a supporting cast around him. He had a terrible supporting cast, so I think he could succeed big time. But ultimately, there's no Zion Williamson in this draft. It's a draft that didn't have the juice to begin with stars, throwing the fact that it's been a crazy year. And I'm sitting there last night watching DA going, wow, put toothpicks in my eyes. This is the worst NBA draft I've ever seen.
Remember, we're coming up on an NBA draft, which once again goes back to high schoolers. So you're going to know even less about some of these draft picks coming up here in a few years when the NBA turns back the clock and allows the 18-year-olds to come in.
Yes, but I do think there's a difference if we do this draft in July where we could fully engulf, come off the NBA season a little bit, maybe, you know, get a little more buzz. Who, I mean, honestly, unless it was one of your teams picking in the top five and you really, really digested, maybe you got into YouTube, and it's crazy to even say, in the midst of football season, to have the NBA draft on a Wednesday night, there's just only so much room in your brain as a sports fan to really digest and get excited or really delve deep into the guys that were about to be picked.
So we'll see. I mean, I have hope that some of these guys could end up being stars or at least perennial all-pros or all-stars, rather, in the NBA. One kid that I liked, and he's really not a kid, he's more of a young man, was the young man out of Israel, Danny Avdija. Okay, and I like this kid because I'd read a profile on him a couple of months ago, maybe a couple of years ago, actually, that he was this great playmaker out of Israel and that he played like an NBA-style type of game. And after the Luka Doncic splash, everybody's been looking for the next European sensation. And some people believe that Denny could be it. Now, he did a post-game interview. He ended up sliding to number 9 with the Washington Wizards and ended up doing that post-draft interview, rather. And he seemed really calm and cool and collected, and he knows his English pretty well, and I think that he'll assimilate pretty well because of his comfort level with the States and his comfort level with English, etc. But also, if you look at his style, it's really a highlight style. It's a guy that likes to make the behind-the-back pass. It's a guy that likes to run the break. It's a guy that likes to finish. A lot of natural talent. So I'm very interested by him. Very rarely do you have top-end talent come out of a little country like Israel, but he is one of those rare commodities. And if you watch him on film, he's, I think, one of the most interesting, intriguing prospects that came out of last night's draft. It felt like there were some big-time reaches, and I think that was because of two things. Number one, as you just said, there was not star power in this draft. Anthony Edwards was one of the quote-unquote stars, but most casual basketball fans never watched him play at Georgia. Weissman, kind of, but again, he only had a handful of games at Memphis. There just wasn't the traditional college star, and there wasn't the traditional, even international star that had been hyped up so much like a Luka Doncic for many, many years. But number two, I think that NBA teams are getting smarter in that they look at the Greek Freak, they look at non-traditional prospects that become dominant because now you have such a wider net to cast globally, and because guys in college, you're playing so briefly before, you know, you could actually kind of assess anything. How do they compare against actual teenagers from across seas? You have LaMelo Ball, who never played college basketball, that played only across seas, because you have so many other working parts to try to assess. I think NBA teams are now a little less inclined to just go, okay, 1 through 30, here's the traditional power rankings, and we'll take number 14 and number 14, number 15, number 15. So you see reaches, and that's somewhat interesting, but it also makes things it's harder to wrap your mind around some of these guys that go that high, because everybody's looking for like this Giannis splash. Because once you get past like the top 8, it's rarely going to happen that any of these guys turn into anything anyway. So the NBA draft become a very weird draft, and last night was one of the weird draft because there was no really high-end talent. I mean, even people thought that Wiseman was a reach at number 2 for the Warriors, and I thought he was kind of the consensus number 1 or number 2 pick in this draft.
Yeah, and obviously getting LaMelo Ball in Charlotte and having a Ball deal with Michael Jordan, to me, is the most fascinating part to come out of this whole thing.
LaVar Ball once upon a time said that he could beat Michael Jordan 1-on-1. Michael ended up taking his youngest son, LaMelo Ball, at number 3. So what will those conversations be like in Charlotte between LaVar and Michael?
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
The Giants have 3 wins. The NFC East is terrible. There is an outside shot that the Giants could win the division. Does this sound familiar? It should, because on this date 2 years ago, November 19th, 2018, Mraz and Bogish had the same take. Roll tape.
The Eagles, Washington, and Dallas all can max out at 8-8. I looked at all their schedules, so I'm looking at the 9-7 Giants right now. I am.
The goal is to win every game.
I am. I'm sorry. I'm back
Why
in.
Why do you do this to yourself?
I spent the whole morning looking at schedules. I'm back in. I'm back in. It's
Come
Saquon.
On.
It's Beckham. It's, you know, here we go, hosting Minnesota on Wild Card Weekend.
So sad.
Stayed up till midnight getting 5 hours sleep to have my ass handed to me by the freaking Eagles again.
You're setting yourself up for disaster. They're not.
Yes, they are.
They're not going to win 7 straight games. There's no way.
It's only one game at a time. And as Odell has told us now for 2 straight weeks, it's only crazy until you do it. They changed their offensive lineup now. Things have changed. Jamon Brown is now 9-0 this year. He's the only undefeated player. Mercury Morris can't pop that champagne.
I sit there in my Zubaz pants.
I see 6 wins across the board there.
I see 8-8, and that might be good enough.
I'm done. one.
Eight and eight might be good enough.
Bogus? What would you even tricking his stupid?
The door is open. The Alex Smith
out of fish tanks like him?
No, the door is now open.
Bogus, you're trolling me at this point because there's no way you believe they're winning at Philadelphia. As bad as the Eagles are, they're
like
not winning.
My left arm is
optimistic. You're not willing to say they're going to win at Philly and then against the Bears.
I've had it with all of them. Shermer's stupid face. Eli's stupid face.
No, I'm going to give you the Bears game. That's why they're not going to win out. That's why 8-8's doable.
You think they're winning at Philly.
And we just suck again for 5 years. How about he doesn't play?
At Washington, home of the Titans. At Indy, home of the Cowboys.
Give me a quarterback.
You want to tell me the Titans are going to come to New Jersey and win a game?
They have
to anything
do,
about them?
They have to do all of those things, though.
I know.
It's really only crazy until you do it.
But we're going week by week.
The Bears tied Brock Osweiler in Miami. They're going to come to New York. Suddenly they're going to stomp on Saquon and the Giants. Forgive me if I'm not just giving that a bear win.
I can't wait until the Giants get pounded by 50 points in all of these games for you guys. You know, they finish up at 4-12.
I wanted the first overall pick. I didn't want this to happen. But here we are, and exactly. I'm all in.
We might as well go forward.
We're
now.
All in now with three wins and the Alex Smith injury.
I'm working with dopes here. I'm working
this is
with
all
dopes.
We got.
You see, I may sometimes be obnoxious, unfunny, maybe off on my sports takes, but you, the people, you need me here because I am the only voice of reason during times like this. The New York Giants didn't finish 8-8. Shockingly, they didn't win the division that year. They finished 5-11 in last place in the NFC East. I knew it, and these guys didn't. They had beaten the Niners and the Buccaneers, two trash teams that year, and then they ended up losing to the Eagles on the road. They beat the Bears, shockingly, in overtime. They ended up beating Washington and then losing three straight to end the season against Tennessee, Indianapolis, and the Cowboys to finish not at 8-8, not win the division, but 5-11, and in last place by two games as the Cowboys won 10 games that year. The Eagles went 9-7, Washington went 7-9, and the Giants were 5-11. What do you have to say for yourself, Mraz?
I was right about not giving you the Bear game. Giants took care of them in overtime, huh?
Unbelievable. And AB, what do you have to say? You're usually far more reasonable than Mraz the Pig.
Yeah, that was the end of my Giant optimism. I've had negative optimism since then. And it is. I should point out that we were not right about any of those things. The Giants were terrible, and the Cowboys and the Eagles both broke the 8-win cap that Sean put on them. They're gonna max out at 8-8. They won 10-9 games respectively. So we were wrong on every single facet of that argument.
There's no way the Cowboys win more than 8 games. They go 10-6. There's no way the Eagles are over 500. They go 9-7. There's no way the Giants are less than 7-9. They go 5-11. You nailed that one, Mraz. Yeah. That's the golden sombrero right there for you.
That was Pat Shermer's fault. We're back now, DA. 3-7, division champs. We're back.
Ew. Ew, 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 ew.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Having a home, that's hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. We start with Sean Payton, who delivers our first Soundcheck clip. As Sean says, he will not name a starting quarterback for Sunday. Here's the clip.
No updates, Mike. I'm eating my bagel. I was hoping to be chewing it when you asked that question.
No update on Drew's injury status either, specifically?
Nope. Nothing specific. Yeah. Nothing there.
Does anybody like to play these games more than Sean Payton, maybe aside from Bill Belichick, to just stonewall you at every quarterback question ever? I mean, look, Sean Payton's won a Super Bowl, and Sean Payton also is remarkably candid when he talks about football and when you're in person with him. We've had him on Radio Row. We've talked to him in person. He's a very good interview. He's a very genial guy. He's a very friendly guy. He's easygoing, you know, when he's away from the football field. Very unlike Belichick, who's always guarded. So I think people like him, and I think that reporters like him, and I think that fans like him. He gets a lot of love, but it's exhausting when we go through the quarterback stuff with him, because it's like 30 NFL coaches can be pretty honest about their quarterback, and then two simply refuse to be. Belichick and Sean Payton. And we're doing this a lot with Sean Payton because Drew Brees has had a lot of injuries over the years, and certainly the last couple of years when it comes to Brees in his late 30s, early 40s, as we talked about last segment. One of the diagnoses or projections said he would be out 2 weeks. That's a collapsed lung and 5 cracked ribs. I find it hard to believe he's only going to be missing 2 days and throw in a flak jacket, or 2 weeks rather, 2 games and throw in a flak jacket. The other day that Mike Tomlin was discussing his undefeated team taking on a 1-win Jaguar squad and happened to say, we got to take everybody seriously. This isn't like we're a Big Ten team taking on a MAC team. Well, his quarterback, Super Bowl winner, and future Hall of Famer Ben Roethlisberger happened to play in that MAC. Remember, he was a Miami of Ohio star. Here's Big Ben.
I haven't had a chance to get him yet. He mentioned it in the team meeting at the beginning too, and I wasn't too happy about that. But I'll get him back. Don't worry. I got to figure out what the conference of William & Mary's in. We'll say something about that.
Big Ben going to Miami of Ohio, but Mike Tomlin going to William & Mary. It is interesting. I mean, I get what Tomlin's trying to do there in saying we can't take anybody lightly. These are all the same league. These are not different conferences. It's not like, you know, we play in a totally different sport than the other guys do, kind of like you would think when Ohio State takes on Western Michigan or something like that. Western Michigan's a bad example, but one of the dregs of the MAC. I get that. At the same time, he should probably say, like, it's not like the SEC playing the Sun Belt or something like that, because his quarterback is a MAC grad, a MAC alumni, and his quarterback is one of the best of his generation to do so. Finally, just the other morning, you know, I was listening. We were all listening here on the DA show before we log on, before we sign on. Of course, Amy Lawrence After Hours precedes us, and so we always get to listen to the final hour of Amy's show as we're getting ready for our show. And the other morning, you had not one, but two callers, and Amy is very diplomatic here to even invite the callers on. Not one, but two callers who are getting in her grill. Hey, stand down, guys. Let's play the clip. Okay, so it looks like we had the Kyler Murray clip. Mraz had sent the caller clip to James, but why don't we play the Kyler Murray clip right here before that, as Kyler Murray prepares to try to do a second act after the Hail Mary, the Hail Murray week, of course, against DeAndre Hopkins, that'll live in infamy in Buffalo Bills land.
I haven't done anything, so as far as MVP deal, yeah, I'm not even really worried about that. I was as far as my personal confidence, do I believe that I'm one of the best in the league? Yeah, of course. I mean, I think anybody should be confident in themselves. So that's what I meant by that. As far as the MVP deal, I don't really, you know, I just try to go out and, you know, lead my team to a win.
I don't really know why the MVP matters to so many people. I mean, I think it's interesting that Russell Wilson's never gotten a vote in the MVP. That feels interesting to me. But whether Russell Wilson wins the MVP or Kyler Murray wins the MVP or somebody else wins the MVP, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, whoever it is, it's almost like, why do we even care about that? It only matters who's holding up the Vince Lombardi trophy. I mean, nobody remembers how many MVPs Tom Brady has won. They only remember 6 rings. Nobody remembers how many MVPs Peyton Manning has won. They only remember the Super Bowls. So whether it's Kyler or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Mahomes or whoever, Lamar Jackson winning the MVP last year is nothing because they were one and done in the playoffs. So while that was a wonderful throw by Murray, and he is must-watch, he's box office right now television, and while the Cardinals have a shot of winning that division and doing some damage in the January playoffs, I don't care whether he's in the lead for the MVP, whether Russell is, whether Russell's fallen back, whether Patrick Mahomes is, Who cares? Have fun with your awards. And finally, here is that clip of these two callers the other morning taking Amy to task for whatever reason. I don't know. It is time to stand down as the callers here.
Well, yeah, it is a bit of a joke, and I know they don't want, no team wants to lose, but as a longtime, you know, Mets fan, Jet fan, some people are fair weather fans. They jump on the bandwagon for the front running teams. Okay?
All right, so, you just don't need to worry about what everybody else does. You just be a real fan.
I don't
fan,
worry
Mike.
About what everybody else does. I'm just making a comment, Amy, okay? Hey, have a good day. Thanks a lot. Okay,
yeah,
thanks
thank
a lot.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Spicy.
I'm a young guy that always bets on sports. I don't work anymore because I win all the time. If you want to know anything about sports, you can call me.
If you want to know anything about sports, you can call me, Andre.
Well, I give you a good trivia question before I get out of here.
Dude, I don't do trivia. That's not real sports knowledge. It's just,
that's not real sports knowledge.
No, it's just it's your knowledge of like some obscure fact. That's not the same as knowing what's happening on the field, the court, the ice right in front of you.
Hey, I might be the only guy that can give you all the Super Bowl winners from Super Bowl I all the way to the present Super Bowl.
Well, I definitely can't. Not in order.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And I want you to figure out who's the only guy to rush for 200 yards and then win the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Figure that one out before you get off the air.
Nah, I've only got another 90 seconds, so it's not going to be in the until I get off the air.
You know, come on here. Amy Slavin threw an overnight shift day after day, morning after morning. We've done that shift. It's brutal on the body. It's brutal on the body clock. And here you are wanting her to dig up some ridiculous, obscure Super Bowl trivia question and getting in her grill. You guys need to stand down. I'm serious. Amy does an amazing job. She was being diplomatic there. She laughed it off. But you guys need to stand down. Give the woman some respect. I mean, geez. Merez, what's going on? We're popping trivia questions. Andre's popping trivia questions at Amy at 5:49 a.m. Eastern time. Give me a break.
And I don't know if you guys have ever dealt with this. If you meet, you know, a friend of a friend back in the day where we used to be able to go to a bar, somebody finds out what you do for a living. It ultimately, you always get somebody like that caller going, oh, I could do what you do. Can you tell me blah, 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 like some random, like, oh, yeah, that's going to carry you through the four-hour show. That's what we need to know, the random factoid, because you know sports, and that means you could do what we do. And it doesn't mean people can't, but those are the kind of guys I can't stand because I've seen them in the past. I hate them. And then they're the same people that will get your number and text you, hey, here's my fantasy football question of the day. Those people need to get lost. Amy's right.
Do you think that sports trivia equates to sports knowledge?
Well, it is sports knowledge by the definition of sports knowledge, but that doesn't equate to basically, you know, the everyday, okay, this happened in this game, but that doesn't matter what happened in this game that we're talking about. Can you tell me what happened in 1984 between the Tigers and Reds on May? Like, those things, like, they are knowledge, but that's not really the knowledge we're talking about on a day-in, day-out basis.
Right. It's understanding stats, memorizing factoids, dates, numbers, things like that. But it's not understanding what's happened in the game, the context
right.
of the game, the context of the situation. There's a much broader knowledge that goes into, quote-unquote, sports knowledge. What do you think, AB, is knowing sports trivia sports knowledge?
Not completely. I mean, there are things you should know and that you need to know, but like things like, you know, who was the third player named Daniel hit five home runs and it, like that stuff doesn't matter. People do like to present that, as Sean said, as like a resume tidbit, like I know this, I know that, but most of that stuff is kind of useless.
Okay, so I bring this up because this is interesting. Do we then think that Mraz has more of a defense of not knowing facts throughout history, geography facts, historical facts, scientific facts, because if we're dismissing the people that say, well, tell me about this, well, tell me what happened to this date, do we then have to say Mraz might be right here, that he shouldn't have to know that type of stuff?
No, because I think there are things that you need to know that would qualify as sports trivia. And just like there are things that you, Sean, okay. things that you should know at this point in life about like bears and tails. Like that's not trivia. Like that's knowledge. You know, like that's just something that you should be aware of. Or when he was stumped by rabbits feeding babies with breast milk. I mean, like that stuff that I feel like you should just be aware of. You don't need to know anything deeper than that, but there is a base level of knowledge that we have questioned about Sean.
Okay, so that's a good point by Bogues. It's like Mraz not knowing that Columbus was not the first pilgrim, thinking that Columbus was the first pilgrim, is kind of like not knowing the Vince Lombardi trophy is named after a former football coach. For him to think all water has salt in it, even ponds and lakes and streams and rivers, is kind of like not knowing that Michael Jordan's famous for winning 6 NBA championships. These are very baseline trivia factoids that he needs to know have any discussion.
But I do know that Lombardi fact. I do know that Jordan fact. And I'm not an ecologist. So I think there it lies. To me, like I always say this, I never pretend to be somebody who would have went to Harvard, but I do think... I do think what I need to know, I know, and anything I don't that maybe people think I should know, I am learning along the way. So I really don't think it's that egregious when I don't know certain stuff. It would be egregious if I did this job and like I had no idea that Shaq played with Kobe on the Lakers. Like that would be egregious. The saltwater thing, first of all, there is still salt in the water. I'm not going to get into that, but like you know, the Jacksonville Michael Jackson stuff, like that's irrelevant to me and my livelihood and how I function in life.
But Sean, I don't want your mom to get any angrier at me. I'm just responding to things that you're saying.
736, like, right in her wheelhouse, folks.
I know, because you've said this before. Like, when did I learn that in school? Like, when would I have learned that in school? Like, the things you know about the Yankees and the Giants, you didn't learn in school. You didn't go to Yankees 101 in seventh grade. Like, you picked those things up along the way by just learning about them and experiencing them. And while, yes, you don't need to know about Jacksonville's history to be a sports host, you weren't building to be a sports host in fourth or fifth grade when you would have learned about bears and tails.
That's what you think.
So, like, that's not really a complete explanation for why we are where we are today with your knowledge level.
Let me just cite. Mraz says, hey, not knowing this type of stuff, not knowing things, not reading, not being up to this type of stuff does not affect my job.
We almost made it the whole week without the reading knock. It's Thursday. I thought we were getting through.
So let me just bring up Monday morning's show sheet, okay?
I mean, enough with the Rolodex you keep on me. Now you bring up something from Monday? You've been sitting on this all
about this
week? Stop burning me.
The title to the show sheet, the topic list, is Giants are division contenders top list. I don't even know why it's Giants are division contenders top list. But
top of the division.
Are division contenders top? That's how you would phrase the job. Good way, the division.
That's supposed to be topic list.
Topic?
Got that IC? Is that
okay.
What we forgot?
So forgot the IC. That's probably right. It's also spelling contenders. CONTEDERS. Conteeters. So Giants are division conteeters top list. Then the first story is Kyler Murray... as a moment. You forgot the H. It's has a moment. A Hail Mary, which is one word to you. It's two words to everybody else. A Hail Mary to beat the Bills deviates Josh Allen.
Deviates. Deviates. It's not a word in any way.
Deviates. Which I think you mean devastates Josh Allen. Okay, there are multiple spelling errors through this entire show sheet. And I'm like, why is this so riddled with errors? But then we brought up in the PGP that your mom said, enjoy the hangover. And I asked you, were you drunk on Sunday? And remember, the Giants had beaten the Eagles for the first time in 8 tries. And we had learned that you had won a 6-leg parlay with the Bayou Bear, flapjack to flapjack, rubbing on each other's bellies on the couch, winners of $550 a piece. Come clean. Were you A, that out of it on Sunday night that you just were still drunk, Or B, do you really care about spelling so little that you misspelled like five different things in the first five sentences of this topic list?
Well, this is some long play that we've gotten Thursday with this. I'll tell you. Look, I will make no bones about it. Did I consume several alcoholic drinks on Sunday because the Giants had beaten the Eagles and I was in a celebratory mood? Yes, I did. Was I anywhere near slurring my words, Zubaz pants, feet up like the Cowboy game? No. But upon further review of hearing these errors and remembering when I was doing the topic list, I would think that maybe there is a chance I was conscious about not wanting to drink as much as the Cowboy game, but maybe I had more than I thought I did. Maybe. Because there's no way, I will say this, there's no way I care about spelling that little. But Sunday, it was a celebratory day. It was. And I just can't believe that we, again, you just didn't hammer me with this on Monday. And then you asked me about on the PGP not bringing up this topic list. It was like you set me up all the way.
Well, to be honest, I thought about bringing it up on Monday, but we had so much football to get to. I'm like, I can't do it on Monday. We're just shoehorning it into a day where it doesn't need to be. But then I thought about Tuesday. Then I thought about Wednesday. Then I said, you know what? We definitely have to bring this up at some point. And then today it just kind of perfectly dovetails in because you're like, I don't need to know any of this stuff to do my job.
And let me just defend myself one quick time here. I am the only one of us. Well, I guess that's not true because DA has to answer with a whole, you know, the rundown on Sunday night. But I'm the only one of us in theory while we are off that day that has to churn out work with going through the topic list. And I feel as if now I'm being punished for in doing the thing every, you know, red blood American likes to have a couple cocktails while you watch football on a Sunday. And now I get screwed because I'm in charge of setting the topic.
Well, it's just hysterical that this is how you would paint yourself here. You could drink all you want on Friday because you don't work on Saturday. You could drink everything on Saturday, the entire cabinet. You don't work on Sunday like some of us do for Sunday morning football or weekend shifts or what have you. And then on Sunday, you could have like 3, 4, even 5 beers probably is fine for you at your weight spread over the course of the day. But you now want to also like, hey, isn't it just being a red-blooded American to be kind of drunk on Sunday night? Well, no, because we've got to get up at the crack of dawn on Monday morning, and you, as the producer, have to provide an organized show sheet for us to bounce off of.
Sure. I think it was only like 5 beers. The problem was we do shots after giant touchdowns, and then we did a celebratory, we beat the Eagles. So I think I had like 4 shots Sunday. But by 4 o'clock, I was good. 4 o'clock, I was coasting. It was all Arizona iced tea for me.
So you're telling me that you had 5 beers and 4 shots, and you think that that might not impair your writing at 7 o'clock at night?
But again, I was so I didn't touch the stuff during the late window. I didn't touch the stuff. It was water iced tea.
I just wish we could interview the spell check on your laptop. Oh. Just get its thoughts on what you type in, and it tries to figure out what you actually mean.
I feel like every week's an intervention now. I'm not driving anywhere. I'm sitting home.
You are, though, supposed to be working. That's the thing. Why don't you just get blitzed on Friday and Saturday and then just let Sunday night be a sober night?
Okay, maybe you're right. I need to rethink my life. But all I'll say is, who says I'm not doing that on Saturday? That's great.
Can a red-blooded American get blitzed on Friday, drink all day Saturday, and then also get drunk on Sunday before
can
work
just,
on Monday?
Can I just
I
have
had
a 3-day
72 hours, DA. Leave me alone. I had a bender. Leave me alone. We all do it.
Can I just have benders every week and nobody bother me?
I said no to number 21, didn't I? I pushed away from Bob's bar after 20, didn't I? I had some self-restraint. And we've got a day full of turkey and stuffing, mashed potatoes, apple pie, pumpkin pie, ice cream, wine, beer, all the fix-ins to make yourself a happy holiday, hopefully, for you and yours. But we've had a debate here on the DA show this week. What is the appropriate time to eat the turkey? I don't want to lead the witness here because the witness is as respected in the eating game as anybody in the world. He is a professional competitive eater. Every year he competes in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition. He is a 2-time back-to-back wienership champion here on the DA show. And he is our personal living legend. He crushes the Red Lobster Admiral's Feast as a one-person sitting. Joining us here on the show is our friend, Badlands Booker. Badlands, good morning.
Hey, DA, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. It's going great. It's always great to hear your voice. And Thanksgiving Thanksgiving is coming up. So let's start with what your day, what your schedule is going to look like. What's your Thanksgiving going to look like?
Well, my Thanksgiving is going to be, you know, me and my wife, we take shifts. I'm cooking, right? She's like more morning person, and I'm the night. So she will do the fixing.
Okay, so she does the fixings, then you do the turkey?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so what time do you wake up to do the turkey?
Hello, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Badlands. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. What time do you wake up to start the turkey?
Well, we do the turkey about, I let her do the turkey. We put the turkey, I say, like early in the morning, like about, you know, 5 o'clock, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., you know, we like to, like, slow bake the turkey. We give it about a good 5 hours to, like, really get all the juices in and stuff like that, right? But I let my wife take care of the turkey. See, my job is to take care of pretty much everything else. You know, you got to have the candy, the macaroni and cheese. You got to have the greens. Oh, man, you got potato salad, macaroni salad. Oh, my God, my mouth's just watering just thinking about all the stuff that we're going to have. But I'm pretty much doing more things around the table. My wife takes care of the turkey.
Okay. Now, I know that you're a big seafood fan. Is there any seafood involved in your Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah, we might throw a couple of clams in the oven. Why not?
What was that? You broke up. A couple of clams in the oven?
No, a couple of salmon. Like pieces of salmon, wild-caught salmon.
Oh, my. So you got turkey and all the traditional Thanksgiving, but also some cuts of salmon going in the oven too, huh?
Yeah, you got to go all out. You know, this is the big turkey day, you know. You can't mess around, okay?
What about shrimp? I know that you love popping shrimp. How about like a shrimp platter?
Yeah, you know, I'll probably put a little shrimp scampi in there. Why not? It's all good.
Okay, all right. Badlands Booker joins us this morning. What time do you sit down to eat Thanksgiving dinner?
We usually sit down around like about 5 o'clock. You know, because it's like there's a lot of time everybody gets to the house, and I mean, it's going to be different this year because of COVID, I know, but like usually, you know, we allow time for everybody to get to the house, you know, get settled and everything, you know, get the aromas going, get the ingestion engines primed for the dinner, you know, so, and then I say about a good, like around 4 or 5 o'clock, we sit around the table and we give thanks, and then we just dig in. And so, like, by 6 o'clock, we all just, you know, fed and just relaxing. Our ingestion engines are full. And then, you know, we'll just say, you know, maybe we'll watch a movie or something or do something afterwards. But, you know, I say about like 4 or 5 o'clock.
How many servings at Thanksgiving are you good for?
Well, you got to understand, you know, it's like when it comes to, like, the servings, doing like a boxing match, you know, it's all about rounds for me, you know. So it's like, should I do an exhibition match with three rounds? Should I just go for the 10 round, you know, WBC title?
That's amazing. So what do you do from the time you wake up until 5 o'clock? You must be famished smelling all the aromas of the turkey in the house. What are you eating between then and 5 o'clock?
Well, there's a lot of taste testing going on. You gotta be just right, you know? Yeah. But the thing about it is with me, it's impossible to smell my appetite.
What's your favorite side on Thanksgiving?
Oh, man. It's got to be a cross between the candy yams and the stuffing. And I also like the mac and cheese. I like the sweet potato pie. Gosh, I can't decide. I like them all. You know me. You know, I got room for everything. So it's just.
You're responsible for the sides. What type of stuffing do you make? Do you go traditional old school stovetop or something else?
We do like a we get like the Arnold stuffing in the bag, you know what I'm saying? Because that stuffing is a little more a little more sturdier. Sometimes we may use the cornbread stovetop stuffing, you know. And then you know, we go the extra mile. We put a little bit of sausage in it, you know, just to make it a little more heartier and everything.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. I've never had the sausage in the stuffing, but I have had that Arnold stuffing, and I really like the cornbread stuffing. I think you're doing it well with the cornbread stuffing.
Yeah. No one likes turkey flavor, but the cornbread stuffing is always sold out because that's the best type of stuffing if you want to get stovetop.
I love it. Badlands Booker joining us this morning on the show. What is your next competitive eating event? Do you have one lined up?
It's a little tough now because of COVID, but I think the next one that Major League Eating is doing, they're doing something with DraftKings, right? So they may have an event on Thanksgiving Day, right, to, you know, where they're eating turkey and stuff like that. They had one for Halloween. They had the Halloween candy bowl where Joey Chestnut and Matt Stoney, Mickey Sudo and all of them, they were in Vegas and they ate just 6 pounds of Halloween candy, you know. And, you know, Matt Stoney had the upset. Joey was the favorite going in, but Matt Stoney pulled the win. And so I think they're going to do it again for Thanksgiving. You know, I guess you just, you know, y'all check DraftKings.com or check MajorLeagueEating.com, you know, to see if it goes on. But as far as me, I'm just helping promote the contest. And, you know, I'm just doing my Badlands Chubbs YouTube channel now.
That's awesome. The Badlands Chubbs YouTube channel. Yeah, what's going on the YouTube channel? You got a lot of people that are watching those videos now.
Yeah. Thanks to all the subscribers. I got 2.5 million right now. And basically what I'm doing is just chugging the world one bottle at a time. You know, and you know I'm going to chug some good Thanksgiving stuff. You know, I'm probably make some extra turkey gravy. And you might see a turkey chug out the Dodge boot, okay? So just stay tuned for that.
So you, on Thanksgiving, to your 2.5 million subscribers on YouTube, you might chug gravy out of the bird?
No. That's a good idea, man. I actually have a beer bottle, 2 liters, right? But mess around.
You're gonna chug Damon. two liters of gravy out of a boot on Thanksgiving.
Yep. But for you to think about, you gotta watch Day Chugs on YouTube.
I love it. Badlands Chugs on YouTube. 2.5 million subscribers, can't be wrong. And I saw you're gonna be in a comic book, right?
Yeah. To drops, right? He drops. He has, right? Superficial. You can go to GameCon for information on it. I appear in the second issue. You know, it's called the Melee at Mufongo's. That's a restaurant where that Dame owns up in Connecticut. And I think my superpower, right, is, you know, just you know chugging like a gallon full of soda and just doing a super Infinity War style burp, okay, just to blow everybody out of the way. I mean, but just check it out. They do have they did release a preview of the comic. Is on DameComic.com, so check that out.
Yeah, it's very cool. You tweeted that out as well. Did you say the Melee of Mufongo?
The Melee at Mufongo, yeah. Yeah, there's going to be a big food fight there, and I just hope I use my super burp powers to save the day. I think the main villain is I think it's a veggie lady. I think we'll be fighting a big celery stalk or something. But you gotta check it out. It's on DaneComic.com. The artwork is really dope. You know, it's Marvel. You know, big ups to Kari Comics for doing it.
It's so cool. Dame Comic, spelled DAYM, comic.com, right, to check out the latest, where Badlands Booker is a superhero and has a,
yes,
a galactic burp. Like, that's, yep, a super power.
They got me. I'm looking like Juggernaut with the helmet off.
Well, Badlands, happy Thanksgiving to you, man. It's always wonderful to hear your voice. You're always in such good spirits. I always love talking to you. So happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And I can't wait to see you chug gravy out of that boot coming up next week.
Definitely, definitely. Same to you, Dan. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Everybody at the DA show, you know I love y'all. You know, to Morales and everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you for having me on. May you have an awesome Thanksgiving. I'll be stuck in front of the TV watching whatever was on, you know, or whatever. And just have an awesome time.
Back at you, buddy. Thanks so much. Okay.
All right. You take care, buddy.
You too. Badlands Booker joining us this morning on the show. He never, ever, ever lets us down. Never lets us down. So, Mraz, that's a win for you. Badlands Booker, who is the most accomplished eater we know, because we do not recognize Joey Chestnut here on the DA show. He says he likes to eat around 5 o'clock, 5:30. That's when he likes to eat his Thanksgiving bird. So that's a win for you.
Badlands Booker is eating Thanksgiving dinner at 5 o'clock. That is when everybody should be eating Thanksgiving dinner at 5 o'clock. I mean, the man is in a comic where a veggie lady is a villain, after all.
Now, I didn't know that his YouTube channel had blown up that big. It's called Badlands Chugs, and he has 2.5 million subscribers. This is why I love Badlands. He's been hustling for a long time. You know, it's hard to just make a living out of just, you know, eating, competitive eating. So you have to do other things. So he's been pimping out his headphones. He's also been a train conductor on the side. He's driven the Long Island Railroad?
No. He the New York City subways, which is where he was during that interview, if you're wondering why the phone was breaking up.
Is that right?
He had held up, this is no joke, held up a train stop when it was going to be the time, and the train is currently stalled somewhere in Manhattan, and he climbed to the top of the stairs to do the interview is what he told me was going to happen. Because he wanted so badly to be on the DA show. So somebody is late to work right now because their conductor had to get out of the train and climb upstairs.
He held up train traffic in New York City subway system to do the hit with us.
That's why it was breaking up.
He is incredible. So he does this YouTube channel, and this thing has totally caught fire. And people just watch him chug anything out of this giant boot. When he said it, it sounded like bird because his reception was breaking up. So I thought, you know, he does all these crazy things. He was going to sip gravy out of the back end of the bird. But he laughed at that. He was not going to do that. But wouldn't you love to see that, Mraz?
Oh, if he could pick up a whole turkey, hold it by the legs, and shoot gravy down his mouth, Joey Chestnut could ever do something like that. By the way, maybe we'll throw some shrimp scampi in there too, some salmon, sure. And by the way, COVID's made our Thanksgiving small this year. We'll do 50 scallops instead of 150.
Now, it's interesting that Badlands ended up finding a home with Liquid because, you know, he's eaten so many solids for so many years. But it's a chug thing for him. It's all about chugging on this channel. So are you surprised at all to see Badlands, who's known for demolishing Admiral's Feasts from Red Lobster, which feeds a family of four or five singularly, that he has now gone the Liquid route?
No, you know why, D.A.? Because it's similar to what we've had the conversation with Drew Brees where your arm starts breaking down. I mean, Baylance Booker is like the original competitive eater. He's been in the game a long time. My assumption is the jaw-chewing has broken down for Baylance Booker. So to get the liquefied chugs, and we've seen him, Badlands loves to play sloppy. He loves to play wet. Remember the Gatorade and everything all over our studio when we were allowed in the studio?
Yeah.
That was all over the place from dunking the hot dogs. The sloppier, the wetter for Badlands, the better. So if he could play something liquidy and wet, I think that plays to his strengths now at his age.
It's such a good point. He's a good bad weather runner. He likes getting into the slop. He likes playing at Soldier Field, Heinz Field.
He would have ran the Ravens offense better than Lamar last Sunday night in New England. There's no doubt about it.
He's a great bad weather back. He likes when the conditions are sloppy. And I'm watching him right now crush a 64-ounce thick Smashburger strawberry shake in that boot. And as he chugs it, he's got strawberry shake all over his face. He's just sipping it out of a boot. He doesn't have to get sloppy with it, but of course he's going to because that's when he's at his natural habitat.
Oh, I love the idea of him watching a movie full at about 6:32, snoring on the couch, gravy all over him. That has to be some house, that thing.
Really get all the juices in it.
Badlands is amazing. God, he never, ever, ever lets us down. He always does and says something that just leaves you in awe. Like, what did you just say? What are you doing?
Yeah, I just hope I use my super burp powers.
He's in a comic book where his superpower is a burp.
Fighting a celery stalk.
Nobody's been more proud to be unhealthy than Badlands Booker.
Chugging the world one bottle at a time.
No one has fought the evils of health and wellness and nutrition quite like Badlands Booker. He is an American treasure. I'm so glad we found him. And he was your hero. He was your idol growing up, right?
He was. He was. I mean, a lot of people would point to a Mickey Mantle, maybe, a Michael Jordan. For me, anybody who's that large and can represent the large masses of us and eat like that and show that it is a sport, that's absolutely a guy that you should idolize in life.
Because you grew up watching the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. This was before Joey Chestnut's reign over everything. And before that, Badlands was the guy that you felt was kind of like the A-lister and had the most swagger.
And I don't want to pat myself on the back. The day and age for social media, I was like the first one of anybody I knew that got into competitive eating and watching the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Shocker. And back in the day, I mean, when it was Kobayashi, it was like Badlands was his main competitor for a long time.
Right.
I mean, he was the OG, as he calls him, the original guy. So, yeah, how could you not gravitate towards it? And, in fact, I've told this story, I believe, on the air. There was a 4th of July years ago where I was coming home from my grandparents' house a few towns over, and Badlands lives on Long Island, and we're on the parkway driving home, and I see all these back decals on a truck saying Badlands competitive eating, Booker, and I said, hold on, there's no way Badlands Booker is next to us on the parkway. We sped up, this is well before the DA show, and sure enough, there was Booker and his wife driving home from Coney Island on the 4th of July, and all you saw on their dash, on their front dash, Nathan's cups everywhere. It was like he took home 40 sodas with him, and they were everywhere. And we started honking the horn saying, we love you, we love you. And he's waving with his wife going nuts. Booker driving home from his own events. And from that, and that really cherished me. It was like, wow, he is one of us. So it was great to see him now and be friendly with him now.
Kobayashi was the dynasty of the early 2000s. He had won 5 consecutive Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contests from 2001 until 2006. He was unbeatable. It was in 2007 when Joey Chestnut then took the throne. Chestnut since then has been a dominant force, even though we don't recognize him here on the DA show. Joey Chestnut won 07, 08, 09, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. Matt Stoney upset him in 2015.
That's right.
But Chestnut has won ever since, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So he has just had an absolutely dominant run. I think he's won 13 of the last 14.
Wow.
Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. But as you mentioned, if you go back to the early 2000s when Kobayashi is the dominant force, his biggest competitor is Badlands Booker. Now, 20 years later, Badlands rarely finishes anywhere close to the top. He's not usually in the top three or top four. Badlands is usually there because he's a historical artifact. I mean, right. Badlands has been bringing
right.
that game to the hot dog eating contest for the better part of 25 years.
Yeah, Vince Carter on the Hawks was not Vince Carter in the slam dunk contest with the
right.
Raptors.
That's
the
That's
similar
exactly
kind of
right.
run, if I could put it.
That's exactly right. Now, if you want to know when the first hot dog eating competition was held, it was 1967 when a guy by the name of Walter Paul won it. They took off 5 years after that, and then on Memorial Day, it was a guy by the name of Jason Schechter, and then they held another one on Labor Day. It really didn't become the annual rite of passage until the 80s. And way back when, this is kind of crazy, but a German winner was in 1984, Bergy Felden won it. That sounds like he was French, but I don't know. I think it says German right there.
And then the
but
Knicks
only
drafted
recently
them.
It's become kind of the great American
yeah.
holiday and the great American contest on that holiday.
Hmm. And they like hot dogs in Germany, so you expect more German winners.
Yeah. The inventors of the Frankfurter.
That's right. Frankfurt, Germany. It's a city.
Yep. And now, boys, we are stunned.
Woohoo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Guys, we've been told more than once after breaking down a stunned like this that we would be bad criminals, which again really is a compliment. I don't want to be a good criminal. I want to not know how to commit crimes, but I do think that we would have at least avoided the mistake that this gentleman allegedly made in what is our first Puerto Rican man stun. A lot of Florida man, but now we have a Puerto Rican man. Okay. Fernando Leon Berdasia allegedly stole $1,300 worth of items from a San Juan Home Depot on Monday night, and he did so while wearing his police officer's uniform. Now, I'm not sure if he forgot what he was wearing or thought that people would go, oh, that's a cop, he can't be stealing all that lumber. But I assume you're supposed to be incognito, not in an easily identifiable uniform when you're stealing things. But he allegedly was, only for now, though, temporarily suspended, I guess, while the legal process plays out, from being the officer whose uniform he was in when he stole things from Home Depot.
I wonder what he stole to get to $1,300, because, you know, Home Depot, of course, they've got lumber, but it would take a lot of lumber to get to $1,300. Is it like a big piece of equipment? Is it some type of big piece of machinery? I mean, $1,300, that's a lot. And definitely, as you said, you have to put it on that cart and then wheel it out to your car because it's not like you can collect and put under your coat or your uniform or in your pockets $1,300 worth of stuff. So you've got to load up that rolling cart and just push it right out of that Home Depot and right to your car and put it in the car and just leave. It's a bold move, but I think, AB, your theory is right. He's wearing the uniform thinking, by wearing my uniform, nobody's going to stop me. And
yeah, I mean, I
it goes to show you, I mean, there's a lot of distrust in institutions and the police force and those and the government in San Juan and Puerto Rico. This might be part of the reason cops think they could just go in there with their badge and steal whatever they want in broad daylight.
Right. You can commandeer a car, but can you, like, commandeer a new sink and some tiles for your bathroom remodel? I don't know if you can do that.
Oh. This guy just wheels out, yeah, like a new washer and dryer set. I got it. I'm going to be fine over
this
here.
This is evidence. I'm taking it back to the headquarters to interview it.
Self-checkout. That's just self-checkout. That's excellent. Mraz, you know,
Sean
you have a
seems
Home
actually
Depot.
Stunned.
No.
Home, Home Depot right near you.
I do. I have a Lowe's and a Home Depot both within walking distance. And I could tell you that my stepfather-in-law just rebuilding a swing set, he spent like $1,000 on lumber alone. So I know the lumber could add up there. So I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder if this guy is stealing to build a swing set, because I know that that cost is pretty much added up here. And I've also thought about that in Lowe's with those big wheelie carts. You know, if you wheel out and you just look like you paid, how would anybody notice? But clearly, this guy had that same kind of thought.
It's the greatest ethical quandary I think many of us ever face. Whatever is on the bottom of your shopping cart, that lower rack, it could be a case of beer, it could be toilet paper, it could be lumber at Home Depot, all of the stuff that's underneath that the cashier rarely sees, do you fess up and bring it to the surface, or do you try to just push that thing forward and then see if she goes or he goes, hey, you got that 24-pack of Dr. Pepper under there? You go, oh, sorry, forgot about it under there. I know that everybody deals with this because we all look on this lower shelf and go, boy, they would never see this if I just push it out. But I always go, but you know what? I mean, come on. This is, I know that this is the wrong thing. I know that I would get caught. I know that the security cameras would, somebody would tackle me 5 feet up there, and I'm not risking that humiliation for $13 worth of beer.
Right. Yeah, I accidentally stole a dozen eggs last week. Same kind of deal. So it happens.
It was on the lower rack of
top, that, you know, like the top, if you will, where the kid would sit. I had like my bring your own bag situation sitting on that, and I had slid the eggs under there because I didn't want anything else crushing them. And by the time I didn't go through the bags I didn't use, I got to the car, loaded up, and went, oh man, I forgot to pay for these eggs. I wasn't going back in. The eggs were mine.
Petty theft. What was that? 99 cents? $1.99?
Yeah, it was $1.99. I felt guilty about it, but who's going back in the store at that point? What's minus mine?
And you have
be careful,
less
three strikes and you're out.
Yeah,
you have less.
And you've already
ethics
had the
and a moral code than all of us. So how often do you, Mraz, think about stealing whatever is in that bottom rack of your grocery cart?
All the time. But remember, D.A., I come from supermarket lineage, so I know that the money goes in those people's pockets. I would never do that.
Well, you think that if somebody steals a 12-pack of Blue Moon out of Food Town, that it comes out of Bob the Deli Man's pocket?
No, but the more people that are stealing those Blue Moons, the more less revenue on inventory. I know how big a deal inventory is. The more that store loses, the more they're going to do cutbacks, and the more somebody gets laid off like my father. So, no, I would never do that. It's a trickle-down effect.
Home Depot, have you ever thought about having a piece of lumber in there to build Taylor a swing set? And
of
you
course.
You just don't scan it?
Of course, I spend enough money there, but ultimately, I'm a man of the people. I don't want to see anybody lose their job because I'm being a thief.
Okay.
Now, if I don't notice, I stole it. Whatever.
To be fair, out of everybody on this show, and that includes Pete, Mraz, I think, is the most likely to knowingly steal something in his grocery cart.
Oh, get lost.
No.
You think Pete?
Yeah, Pete. Yes. We know this. Pete steals a third of his lunch. Pete would definitely put something underneath there and try and get himself out without being caught. Something small, but it adds up.
Well, so we're basing this on the time that Pete went to the Weigh Your Lunch buffet and he put his finger underneath
the times the
underneath
Pete did
this. The container so that it wasn't as heavy on the scale.
You and the time that he robbed you of a sandwich. Yes.
He didn't rob me. I offered to buy him the sandwich. He just brought it home to eat it.
That's stealing.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
And a final reminder that our toll-free line is sponsored by GEICO. Whether you rent or own, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Having a home, that's hard work. Get a quote, GEICO.com. That's easy. We asked you today, what's the appropriate time to eat Thanksgiving? Is it between noon and 3 or after 4 o'clock? 62% said between noon and 3, an early dinner. According to market research, a little more than a third of Thanksgiving meals start between 5 and 6, but the peak start time is 6 o'clock. Americans consume 736 million pounds of turkey on Thanksgiving. That's about the weight of the Empire State Building.
Whoa.
So again, you guys as D-aliens and listeners of the show are more prone to eat early, but apparently peak start time in America is 6. That's way too late for me. I need that bird out by 4 o'clock. I want that bird at 4 o'clock. That gives me late lunch, early dinner, and then I can wrap around at around 8 o'clock for my first turkey Sammo, or just go right back for the full turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy, cornbread as I get ready for the night game. 6 is just a late start, because then what am I doing? Am I eating lunch? How big is the lunch? How big is my breakfast? I can't do all that management, all that load management. Badlands Booker joined us earlier in the show, and he was phenomenal talking about his Thanksgiving. But actually, our epic fail this morning has to do with something that happened on Monday. All the guys on the show noticed that our topic list on Monday morning was just riddled with mistakes, grammatical mistakes and spelling mistakes. And while Merez isn't exactly Einstein or winning a Nobel laureate usually writing these things, this was notable in how many misspellings there were. So we all noted this, and I brought it up finally today after laying in the weeds for the first 4 days of the week. Here is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Come clean. Were you A, that out of it on Sunday night that you just were still drunk? Or B, do you really care about spelling so little that you misspelled like 5 different things in the first 5 sentences of this topic list?
Well, this is some long play that we've gotten Thursday with this, I'll tell you. Look, I will make no bones about it. Did I consume several alcoholic drinks on Sunday because the Giants had beaten the Eagles and I was in a celebratory mood? Yes, I did.
What, are you drunk, Mr. Hurley?
Well, I had a few Chardonnays. What of it?
Get off the stand, please.
Well, to be honest, I thought about bringing it up on Monday, but we had so much football to get to. I'm like, I can't do it on Monday.
I am the only one of us. Well, I guess that's not true, because DA has to answer with a whole, you know, the rundown on Sunday night. I cook all week for my wife. I'm a man at the griddle. But I'm the only one of us, in theory, while we are off that day, that has to churn out work with going through the topic list. And I feel as if now I'm being punished for doing the thing every, you know, red-blooded American likes to do, having a couple cocktails while you watch football on a Sunday, and now I get screwed because I'm in charge of sending the topic.
Well, it's just hysterical that this is how you would paint yourself here.
That's the truth, and I'm sticking by it.
You could drink all you want on Friday because you don't work on Saturday. You could drink everything on Saturday, the entire cabinet. You don't work on Sunday, like some of us do for Sunday morning football or weekend shifts or what have you. And then on Sunday, you could have like 3, 4, even 5 beers probably is fine for you at your weight spread over the course of the day. But you now want to also like, hey, isn't it just being a red-blooded American to be kind of drunk on Sunday night?
What language is that?
Well, no, because we've got to get up at the crack of dawn on Monday morning, and you, as the producer, have to provide an organized show sheet for us to bounce off of.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
It's so funny how Mraz frames things. Like, for me, I get 1 day sleeping in a week, which is Saturday morning. So I really look forward to Saturday morning to just not have to get up at the crack of dawn for this show or Sunday morning football. And here's Mraz going, why am I not allowed to drink 3 straight days? Why can I not drink a Sunday night and be drunk to do my work on Sunday night? Why am I not allowed to do that? Aren't I entitled to drinking and being drunk 3 straight days every single week? Why am I not entitled to being drunk 3 out of the 7 days a week every single week?
And as always, it's an extreme. It's not like 1 or 2 beers. It's 5 beers and 4 shots in 3 hours, which is not the average drinking binge that folks go on during football.
Like on Tuesday night, I had this this micro brew, and it was kind of heavy alcohol content. It probably was like 7% or something like that, and it was an 18-ounce. So I had this, and I was like, ooh, wow, I feel good after this. Okay, that's good. And I remember waking up being like, wow, I can't believe I still feel that way. And this was 1 beer on Tuesday night. Mraz drinks all day on Sunday, has shots, multiple shots And then it's like, what? I'm not allowed to be drunk on Sunday.
What?
What are you guys, the police on fun suddenly? All right, that'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to James Boccioni, Bocch on the Wheels of Steel today. Great job this week as he has filled in for Pete admirably. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow. Big Target Demo Friday. The Mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.